On that fateful Thursday afternoon, Michael Lopez and Chris Collar banded together for a new episode of Hooked on Comics. Hello and welcome, true believers, to another episode of Hooked on Comics, the show where we flip through the pages of the comic book world, broadcasting live from kpcradio.com. I am your spectacular host, Michael Lopez, and today with me, I have Chris Collar, manager of Earth 2 Comics. Say hi to our loyal listeners, Chris.
Hello, lawyer listeners.
How are you doing today?
Lawyer listeners? I think I said lawyer listeners.
Lawyer.
I'm sure lawyers listen to this show. It's got to be somebody. You have a legal department at the college, right?
Yeah.
They're probably tuned in.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing all right. I'm here back at a college, which I haven't been at in a number of years, even though I work next to one.
All right, now let's flip through this page. So are you from around here, Chris?
Yeah, born and raised in Southern California. I live in Newbury Park, which is based Thousand Oaks. It's just a little bit north of here. So, yeah, been in Southern California my whole life, pretty much been in the same place my whole life, which probably sad, but also, I mean, it kind of, you've got your roots in there, so you have a lot of history and legacy in that area, so...
And you just said you attended school somewhere. Where'd you attend?
I went to Moorpark for a while, and then I went to CSUN for the last few years.
And where did you study?
I was actually an English major.
Oh, okay.
I was a lit major, creative writing major. So a lot of English courses when I was at CSUN. So a lot of English lit, writing, review, process, all that type of stuff.
And how long have you been interested in comics?
I've been in comics for over 3 decades.
Oh, wow.
I started very young.
I did not realize you were over 3 decades.
Oh, yeah.
I would have guessed like 22.
Nope.
What got you into them?
I was reading my brother's comics. He had, it was Star Wars, really. He had a lot of the Star Wars comics. And so the first comic I remember reading is Star Wars #5, which is the penultimate chapter of their adaptation of A New Hope. It's the Darth Vader Kenobi fight, the escape from the Death Star, and the briefing. So... through the years, as he was getting a couple comics here and there, he was never like every month or what have you. He would just pick up a few here and there, and that back then it was the only way to like consume that entertainment. You know, Star Wars existed as a movie that you didn't have on home video at the time. You didn't have streaming.
Right,
you didn't
right.
have any of that stuff. So if you wanted new Star Wars stories, that was the only place to go. And then I got into G.I. Joe. I was huge into the toy. G.I. Joe #5 is the first comic I ever bought.
Oh.
Still remember buying it. It's the spinner rack at Burt's Pharmacy in the back right corner.
Do you still have it?
Yeah, somewhere. I mean, it's probably beat to heck, but it's one of the things. G.I. Joe was the one that really got me. I was, by issue like 9, 10, 11, kind of figured out the whole, hey, it's once a month, and these are the places you can get it. So I was going out of my way to make sure that I had that comic every single month. And then I was getting Star Wars, and I started really with licensed comics. I mean, it was that stuff. It was Transformers. Anything that had a toy line that Marvel was doing, you'd pick up. Masters of the Universe, what have you. So that's where I started. I didn't get into superhero comics until later. It was 6th or 7th grade when I finally started. I started with Punisher, and then X-Men was... Uncanny X-Men 275 was the first mutant comic, first superhero comic, I guess, I bought. And then from there, it was just all downhill or uphill, whichever way you want to look at it.
And so are you Marvel or DC or any other?
Both. My background was Marvel, mostly because most of the licensed stuff I was getting was Marvel, because
yeah.
G.I. Joe and Star Wars were both Marvel. But from G.I. Joe and Star Wars, I went into Dark Horse with Aliens vs. Predator, Usagi Yojimbo. I started with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I was, you know, a fan of the toys, the cartoon. I thought the cartoon was kind of dumb, but it was fun, like whatever. My friend Scott, when I was in junior high... he was collecting the comics. He said, you know, you got to try the real Turtles. You got to try the real Turtles. And I bought TMNT 19, which was Return to New York Part 1. And this is much different. Like, they actually kill people. The foot are humans. They're not robots.
It's not silly party
yeah,
Turtles.
Yeah, it's them, Raph and Leo in this major fight right in the beginning, and then Raph going to New York and just laying waste to foot soldiers and stuff like that. And then the end of it features a Triceraton, which I had no idea existed. And I was like... yes, because I was a big dinosaur guy. I've been a dinosaur guy since I was, you know, that's as far back as I could go is dinosaurs. So there's always an interest there. And then, yeah, from there, Marvel was the start because I was a big X-Men fan, the whole X-Universe, all those books. When they did the X-Genesis, X-Men #1, X-Force #1, Uncanny X-Men 287, Excalibur 42. I can never remember the X-Factor number. And this is 77, 79, something like that. But that was such an easy way to jump in because they were starting all new storylines. They had all these great creators. You know, it was Jim Lee, Will Spertasio was doing Uncanny X-Men. Alan Davis was doing Excalibur. Rob Liefeld obviously was doing X-Force. And so that became a big portion of it. My friend was a big Batman fan, so I started reading his Batman comics. I read all of his Frank Miller, you know, Year One, Dark Knight Returns. So I had some Batman here and there. And then when Morrison did Justice League, that's kind of where I got into DC as a whole. And from there, I never really identified with just one company because, again, early on I had Marvel, but I also had all these independents that, you know, Mirage Studios, which was publishing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and Dark Horse that was publishing Usagi eventually. So there's no, as long as it's good, whoever publishes it, if it's a good comic, it's a good comic to me.
And what would you say is the main thing that really separates Marvel from DC, from their stories, from the artwork, like the heroes?
The difference between the two, and a lot of my opinion of that is informed by Kurt Busiek's JLA Avengers. The idea that your Marvel world was a little grittier. The heroes weren't treated as well from the community as a whole. I mean, as an X-Men fan, you know, a world that fears and hates them, but they still protect it. Whereas DC, there's a Flash Museum, there's a Superman Museum, there's a Wonder Woman Museum. You know, the community in the DC universe as a whole really celebrates its heroes. And I think on the whole, as their heroes are so much older and they're created in such a different time period, their basic core values are so different than the core values that the X-Men and Spider-Man and Daredevil and the Fantastic Four were created in the 60s. Even that short amount of time, you know, from the 30s to 60s, some of those, what was going on and what informed that art had changed. And so the quote-unquote realism of the Marvel Universe informed all of their heroes of being much more down-to-earth, gritty. You had a lot more heroes that were a lot more intense, I guess, to a certain degree. The villainy was different. Marvel tried to have villains that you sort of understood, especially as you got into the 70s and 80s, someone like Magneto or Doctor Doom, where you just kind of tilt your head and go, yeah, I kind of get that. Whereas DC's were just, well, I want to destroy the world, or I just want to rob banks for no reason. So I think that was a lot of the differences in the universes. But now I don't know if you really can, if there's really like a house credo that divides those two big companies.
All right. And I was really young in the 90s. I didn't read comics, but I've always heard that the 90s comics were horrible.
The 90s comics weren't horrible. They weren't horrible when you were in the middle of them. There's a lot of crap out there in the 90s. But the X-Men stuff, if you're an X-Men fan, you like that type of stuff, the 90s was your jam. I mean, it was great. Problem was, that's all Marvel was focused on. There were other good books that were there. You know, you had a good Daredevil book for a while. You'd see some pieces, but go back and look at the 90s stuff for Fantastic Four, Fantastic Force, splitting off of it. Ugh. Avengers kind of hit or miss as you get a little deep. And there's a crossover that they have with the X-Men at one point, and that's where I got introduced to Steve Epting, who did a lot of the art for Captain America when Ed Brubaker was doing it. But none of those titles got any traction because he didn't get any support. When Joe Quesada took over as the editor-in-chief, one of the big things that he wanted to do was to reestablish the Avengers, reestablish the Fantastic Four, reestablish these other heroes that had kind of been pushed to the wayside in terms of X-Men, 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 because that was the only thing that they were selling. 90s Batman is really good. There's some 90s Superman stuff that's really good. But again, you have sort of a large amount of those type of comics, too, just don't hold up. But there's a nostalgia to them now. I mean, a lot of those comics, those storylines, those series are being reprinted now. And you go back, first thing you notice is there's a lot more words. Oh. Go back to the 80s ones. I bought Avengers Under Siege, which the bad guys take over the mansion. Wow, there's a lot of words. You're reading like, oh, this is okay. I forgot this is how comics were done back then. But no, there's good stuff in the 90s out there. It's become that kind of cliche. And there's a lot of the independent stuff is Image started. A lot of the Image stuff isn't good. There were so many companies that were jumping on because they saw something like X-Men sell 7 million copies, of which maybe less than half made it into the hands of actual readers. Everyone was jumping in, so everyone was making comics. And they were not people that were invested in the art of comic books, even as a successful, you know, brand, but making just whatever they could as quickly as possible, and the talent suffered for it. The art suffered for it.
All right. And you say that back then there was way more words in comic, in like all the stories. So how else have comics changed since you first started reading to what they are now?
Well, obviously there's a bigger consciousness of comics now. It's one of those weird dichotomy in which the stories that comic books, a comic book story, whether it's based directly on a storyline, whether it's something in the same vein, that pulp culture is huge now. And yet comic books are kind of in this sort of weird corner where they're not as big as they were then. But as a culture consciousness, I think it's so much bigger. I think your heroes are, there's a lot more gray area. You've got, I mean, obviously we've seen, like I mentioned with Marvel, we've had two civil wars. Ever since Miller's Civil War, you've had these heroes that are sort of uneasy with each other. You've had Avengers versus X-Men, you have Civil War II, Civil War, World War Hulk, where he comes back to try and basically kill the Illuminati. There's a lot more of the sensibility that authority is wrong, governing bodies are wrong, corporations are wrong. All of that permeates a lot of storylines now where you didn't see that back then. You throw out the comics code and it's not, everything has to be so hunky-dory and everything just kind of rolls through. And you have storylines are a lot shorter. You go back and read Chris Claremont's X-Men and there are subplots that last for 20, 30 issues before they're wrapped up.
Wow.
The 90s, you had the X-Traitor, which you see in, it's like X-Men 6 or 7 or something like that. Where the character, out of time, Bishop comes back and says that the X-Men were destroyed by a traitor within their own ranks. Well, you don't get that until Onslaught, which is like 40 issues later. It's like 3 years before you see anything with it. That type of stuff really doesn't exist anymore. Everything's got to be in the trade. And that's probably the biggest change from then to now is those trade paperback collections. That's where everything's geared towards making sure that you can get it into a square-bound volume that can go to comic shops, go to bookstores, go to Amazon, unfortunately, and it's more easily disseminated to a larger mass of people. It's just the way that people kind of can get into it and not necessarily collect it, but actually use it as reading material and stuff they go back to. And that goes back to me, it always goes back to Vertigo. Because all right, that's what Vertigo started with, Sandman always being in print and selling it in bookstores where people were finding those comics, not in the traditional areas of drugstores and convenience stores and comic book stores, but finding it in bookstores.
All right, and who would you say is your all-time favorite comic book character, either superhero or villain? Like, who do you just love reading about?
I don't think I can put one.
There's
a lot of different. I mean, in Marvel, as an X-Men fan, my first like favorite X-Men was Forge, which is like nobody's favorite X-Men. He was so cool. I got into it. Like Uncanny X-Men 275 is Jim Lee. And Jim Lee's art, you know, he always had those cool technical guns. And Forge had this beautiful, long, flowing black hair that he had in a ponytail. So he was awesome. But also Colossus, Storm, Wolverine, as much as, you know, not obsessed with him like so many other people were, but I did like that him as a character. Thor, Punisher, that was kind of my Marvel side. DC, Green Arrow, that's one of the first that I was reading. Actually, the funny thing is when you get into the 90s, Green Arrow was Connor Hawk, Green Lantern was Kyle Rayner, Flash was Wally West. So those are those characters that I grew up with, the ones that I got into. So when they brought back the classics of Ollie Queen, Hal Jordan, and Barry Allen, respectively, I was sort of like, no, I don't want these guys back. I like the other ones. But I was a big Green Arrow fan, Martian Manhunter, Batman, obviously. Nightwing, those are kind of the first ones that we really liked. In terms of villains, again, as an X-Men guy, I really liked Magneto. I was always a big Apocalypse fan. Ultron, because that was my favorite Kurt Busiek story for the Avengers, was the Ultron story. DC, DC's a lot tougher. I mean, I've always loved Mr. Freeze, mostly because the design sense for Mr. Freeze is so awesome. Like, I love the way he looks and all those different incarnations through movies and TV and comic books. I just love seeing how people kind of redesign him. Trying to think of DC, if anybody else that I'm like, oh, I'm really excited to see that villain. Maybe Flash's Rogues, just that whole group when they're together is a lot of fun. That's what I'm thinking of off the top of my head. I'm sure if I had a little more time, I'd start scrubbing them all down. But I was a huge fan of Usagi Yojimbo, still am. Huge fan of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in terms of the comic book. in all the different incarnations they've been in. The IDW series, which is now the longest running Turtle series, is amazing. Really well done. Stuff like, I mean, even independent stuff like Box Office Poison, if you read that, Alex Robinson's book is great. Those characters, not superheroes or anything, but just great characters that you read and fall in love with, and they're your, you know, some of your favorite characters, is something that's more akin to a drama than an action superhero piece.
All right. And we can't talk about comics without mentioning the movies. So when you were reading when you were a kid, was there ever a time when you were just reading like, man, these would make great movies?
I think everybody did. But there was something, one of the things that I'm going to put on my get off my lawn voice here. When you were a kid, having comics obviously wasn't like it is now. The fact that I walk outside the door of the comic book store and on the street at any given time, and the shop in Northridge is right next to CSUN, so it's a lot of younger people, you know, 18 to 25. Batman t-shirts, Spider-Man t-shirts, Star Wars t-shirts, by the dozens, if not hundreds, Wonder Woman t-shirts, Batgirl t-shirts. We didn't have any of that when I was in high school. Like, you didn't. I wore surfing shirts, even though I couldn't surf, because that's what kept you from getting beat up. You didn't go out and tell people, I'm reading X-Men, I'm reading Punisher, I'm reading Batman. It was a clique. It was a little circle. And this is what we, and the general we of comic book fans, this is what we wanted, right? We wanted to be bigger. We wanted everybody to love our stuff. We wanted these big movies, and then we got it, and then we couldn't stop complaining about it. What we wanted was to be left alone more than anything else. It's like, just let me have my comics and leave me alone. I'm not one of those people. I love the fact that this pop culture has become the stuff that I loved as a kid. You know, as big as Star Wars was when I was a kid, it's nothing like it is now. And it's awesome to have that content every week, if not, you know, every day, of new content that's Star Wars, Marvel, DC, having Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles still exist. You know, not having it just go through like 10 years and go, this is the end of it. So that the movies and TV and everything, I think we all kind of wanted it. It's all quality. It has to be. Or else you don't get something like this. You have to appeal to masses, or you don't get an Avengers film that makes $1 billion. You don't get a second Batman film that makes almost $1 billion. You don't get Transformers films that unfortunately make $1 billion. And you don't get new Star Wars. You don't have Disney spend $4 billion to acquire Lucasfilm for the explicit purpose of making new films. You would have never gotten that. So this is, I think, what we wanted. I think some of us, and I'm using a general we or us in terms of people like me that kind of grew up in that late 80s, early 90s. Yes, I'm old. What we were kind of asking for, we got. And it's a good thing, even though so many people treat it as a bad thing, that's in that kind of the older generation.
All right. Well, I want to move on to your working time at Earth 2. So how long have you been working there?
I've been at Earth 2 since 2012.
Oh, wow. And is it a dream come true working there?
I don't want to say dream come true. It's very different than what I thought it would be, but in a good way. I mean, it's not... If for all you kids out there that want to work for a comic book store, if you think you're going to show up and you're going to read comics for 4 hours and then go home, you're wrong. Any store that employs the people that do that is a store that's going to close its doors. It is not an easy business. It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of logistics. It's a lot of research, which includes reading comics and knowing the business and knowing the entertainment part of it, or knowing the stories and that type. But the great thing with it is being able to share that love and passion for it. There's nothing like having someone come in looking for something and being able to point them in the direction of some of your favorite stories of all time. And again, that those trade paperbacks I talked about, that's the way to do it. You know, they come in like, I'm just looking for something. When the Netflix Daredevil first appeared, it's heavily based on Frank Miller and John Romita Jr.'s miniseries Daredevil Man Without Fear, which is kind of like the year one version for Daredevil. I would just throw that into people's hands and they'd come back like, I want more of that. And we turn them on to the rest of Frank Miller's stuff and Brian Michael Bendis's stuff for Daredevil, and they just start consuming it. And seeing people in the shop that kind of start off with, I'm just getting a book here, I'm just getting a title here, a comic here, and then a year later they're getting 15 comic books a month. You know, they've really thrown themselves into the culture. That's the awesome part of it. That's the part I always hoped would be would be a really big part of that type of job. And it's been that. And it's also, it makes you feel accomplished when you're doing something where you're moving stuff that you really enjoy into the hands of people that also really enjoy it.
All right. And do you guys have any events coming up soon, signings or
anything? We have Saturday, November 18th is what they call Local Comic Shop Day. So both stores will be celebrating. There's limited edition items in both stores. It's something that was started a couple of years ago. It's the Saturday before Thanksgiving. It was kind of something to do. The first year they did it for Small Business Saturday, but we've actually moved it, or they've actually moved it to the week before. So that's that big thing that you have towards the end. I guess the week and a half. 2 weeks from yesterday, which was Wednesday, is Doomsday Clock, which is the, in a way, of the sequel to the DC Rebirth one shot that came out last year, when they discover the button. That's going to be huge. It's just a ginormous comic that people are really excited about. So that is November 20. Wow, geez, I'm trying to remember my dates now. I think it's the 21st is that week. And so those are like the big things for November. And then we go into December. And, you know, a lot of that is just coming in and finding really cool stuff that that people get excited about for, you know, not only yourself, but for someone else. Just like what I do in getting other people excited as fans. That's also the great thing when people come in and buy their favorite stories to give as gifts and stuff for the holiday season. So that's where the focus is through the end of the year.
All right. So we're down to our last couple moments, Chris. So my last question to you today is, well, you obviously find superheroes inspiring. Like, what advice can you give to people out there who are just finding life hard and they need inspiration in their life?
Wow. I'm probably the worst person to be a guidance counselor like that. I mean, it's find... Sometimes they're the small things that get you through. Like, again, I went through a lot for being a geek or a dork or a nerd or whatever you want to call it through junior high and high school. I got made fun of. I got, you know, not necessarily beaten up, but you always have, you know, that guy that comes by you and pushes you into the locker like, oh, you're such a dork because you like X-Men or whatever. But if you find something that you love, find something that you enjoy as an entertainment, there's nothing wrong with that. And own it. And we've seen that culture has exploded. This comes from my generation and the generation just below me that is basically saying we're no longer going to be embarrassed by what we love. We love Star Wars and we're going to keep telling people we love Star Wars. We love Batman, we're going to keep telling people we love Batman. We love X-Men, we're going to keep telling people we love X-Men. And we're going to demand that we still get entertainment from those properties over and over again. And there's nothing wrong with that. And it's finding those little pieces, whatever it is that makes you happy. You find the thing that makes you happy. It doesn't hurt anybody else. It's something positive for you. It's something positive for the people around you. Hold on to that and encourage that, and encourage that others. And stop being so cynical. We've seen this rise of cynicism, and it's such a big part of pop culture, and it's really tough, you know, and everybody gets caught up in it. But, you know, you had Sebastian in here a couple of weeks ago. He was a friend of mine.
Yeah.
That's how I'm on here. Sebastian asked you to ask me to do it. Sebastian and I were doing a review podcast for a while for comics. And one of the things we had was all of our reviews are positive. If it's a book we don't like, we're just not going to talk about it because there's no reason to get on the air. Oh, yeah, this comic is terrible. Don't go buy this. What's the point of that? We wanted to get on and find books that we really liked that we thought people maybe wouldn't be into. Extremity Number One from Image, a book that both of us wasn't on our radar. We read it. This is really, really good. Get on the air and say, you should go buy this. You should go get this. So something that I think when you get caught up in that cynicism, you get caught up in that trollism and all that stuff that people seem to find enjoyable. Is it really? Is it really enjoyable versus trying to do something positive? And then now I sound like the positive one. That's not me. That's never been me. And yet now here I am trying to be the positive one in all my relationships. It's crazy.
Well, everyone, you've heard it from Chris himself. If you ever want to have a chat with Chris, go check out Earth 2 in Northridge, located at 8967 Reseda Boulevard, or in Sherman Oaks,
yeah,
at 15017 Ventura Boulevard. You could also check out Chris's own podcast. Where can we find it?
My friends and I do a podcast called Nerdibles, Nerdibles. We're on we're on iTunes, SoundCloud, all that. If you go to nerdibles.com, or better yet, find our Facebook page, you'll find links to our shows. We've done over 200 of them. We also do a Star Wars show once in a while that's on that same feed. Sebastian and I, when we do the review shows, they're there. So that's my personal sort of podcast. And every week we talk about, you know, whatever the pop culture news is and stuff like that, review movies and stuff like that. The last one was Thor Ragnarok that we talked about for an hour. So it's just a fun little thing. There's a little cynicism on that. And part of that's me, but that's just, you know, it's a little bit of a persona that I have to put on for
right.
that one.
All right, then. Well, thanks for being here, Chris. I had a good time.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I had a good time, too. This was fun.
All right, everyone. That's all the time we have today. For KPCRadio.com, I'm Michael Lopez, and thanks for stopping by.